A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Not a doctor.
Bye, have a beautiful
from your love.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive, and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing House of the Dragon Season 1. Damask Leary, it's been a little while. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Settled into some new digs. The school year is almost over. And I'm coming to Melbourne in, Whoa! What, 4 days?
So,
very exciting.
We should be recording a couple episodes at least in person, mm-hmm. which will be exciting. That'll
That's
be
right.
fun.
Face to face. I want to be like 3 inches away from your face.
What?
While we do it.
Well, we've got plenty of room. We don't need to be doing that.
No. I want to be as close as possible to you, Brad, while I can.
We're not sharing a mic like we did back in the early days, the first time I recorded.
Memories.
We did record an episode back in April when I came to visit you, I think, from memory. I can't remember what it was about, though. Was it Mrs. Maisel? Do they have another season, this year or something like that?
Brod, you know I can't remember yesterday. How on earth would I remember that?
Fair enough. Let's get then, so we can keep this in our minds and then get rid of it forever. Let's get to our spoiler-free review of House of the Dragon Season 1.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
House of the Dragon is an American fantasy drama television series created by George R. Martin and Ryan Condal as a prequel to HBO's Game of Thrones series. Based on parts of Martin's 2018 novel Fire and Blood, the series is set nearly 200 years before Game of Thrones and portrays the events leading up to the beginning of the decline of House Targaryen, a devastating war of succession known as the Dance of Dragons. Season 1 was co-showrun by Condal and Miguel Sapochnik, who directed standout Game of Thrones episodes Hard Home and Battle of the Bastards, and features an ensemble cast including Paddy Considine, Matt Smith, Emma D'Arcy, Millie Alcock, Reese Ifans, Steve Toussaint, Eve Best, Sonoya Mizuno, Fabian Frankel, Olivia Cook, and Emily Carey, among many more. Season 1 of House of the Dragon premiered on August 21, 2022, and consists of 10 episodes, each coming in at around 60 minutes, taking us approximately 10 hours to watch. House of the Dragon has been greenlit for a second season, but will not arrive until 2024. So, Damask, before we get to our spoiler-free review of House of the Dragon Season 1, could you please tell me, how familiar are you with George R. Martin's books, the Song of Ice and Fire books, the Dance of Dragons books, or Fire and Blood, whatever it's called, and just your thoughts on Game of Thrones as a show, since this is now the prequel?
So I read the first 4 books.
How many are there so far?
I don't know. I feel like there's 6 now or something. I read those, really enjoyed them when I read them, particularly the first one. Like, I was super hooked. And so when the show was started, I was very, very excited, really enjoyed a lot of Game of Thrones. I speak a little bit about that in my spoiler-free review.
Sure.
Some real lowlights there for me around like the more gory aspects of the show later on in the seasons. And obviously the ending was a trash fire, which we can all agree on.
Yeah, I have not read any of the books in George R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series. I would like to one day, I guess. It's funny, though, because I know what happens for the most part, even though I know there are major differences between the books and the show, it's hard to get really excited about reading the books. Maybe I'll listen to the audiobooks or something one day while I'm driving to work or something like that.
Oh, don't. The audiobooks are really bad. Tyrion has an Irish accent for no reason.
I tried. They gave him a leprechaun accent, and that's when I gave up.
It's so bad.
Such a terrible choice. How have they not updated that with somebody else doing it? Like, someone from the show. Like, get Lena Headey to do it or something like that. Or Charles Dance. Like, get him to do... Yeah. He wouldn't be able to do the... Why would I underestimate Charles Dance? Get Get Peter Dinklage to do it. He could do it for sure. That'd be great. Anyway, Game of Thrones is a show. Fuck, that was an amazing period of time there when Game of Thrones, from seasons 1 to 6, I want to say. Watching it week to week was a joy. It was a ritual. You looked forward to the new season every year or every couple mm-hmm. of years whenever they finally arrived. We'd sit on the couch as housemates and watch every episode together. I remember watching the episode where the Oberyn, is that what his name is, fights the mountain. Anyway, like standout memories watching the show with people, and then it fell to shit in the last couple of seasons in particular. It was on a bit of a decline earlier, but really the last two seasons, particularly the last season, was a real, real disappointment. So much so that I've never known something to have such amazing, like, cultural cachet and then lose it so fast.
Immediately. Yeah, it was crazy.
Everyone was talking about it for 10 years and then no one was talking about it anymore. Instantly. Incredible. Mm-hmm. That being said, people have been watching this show. It's been pretty successful for HBO, if not quite Game of Thrones numbers at this stage. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about what we thought about House of the Dragon Season 1. Damask, would you like to give your spoiler-free review?
Certainly would. All right, so the first little bit is a bit of a rehashing of what we've just said. So Game of Thrones aired so long ago. Like I said, I'd read a few of the books and absolutely adored them. Season 1 of the show was incredible, and I enjoyed it for most of its run. Much of the gore and sex was a part of the package, kind of its selling point. It was, 2011, and my thoughts on these types of things were far less critical. It didn't make me feel sick to see actresses objectified and their characters in compromising situations, but it does make me uncomfortable now. Now, that's not to say that those types of stories are without merit. However, to start a series with scenes of Matt Smith's character having sex with a naked actress with all of her body on show and him allowed modesty robes is beyond jarring in 2022. The actor is in a position of dominance in the scene. It's directed in a very specific way that neither seems necessary to inform character or further the story. It felt exploitative and dated. It was to excite and shock the audience. This is Game of Thrones, folks, the show with all of the aggressive sex. Welcome back. And with that, from the very get-go, I was disappointed. It's 11 years since the original air date of GOT. In season 5, the role of Ramsay Bolton was so upsetting to me that there were many scenes that I felt forced to fast forward. They were too brutal, too upsetting. And House of Dragon wanted its first episode to also have a reminder to the audience of the violence. Not just the sex, but remember, this is a show that's super violent as well. Once again, with that, I was disappointed. I was thinking back on the very beginning of Game of Thrones. We had so much time to get to know the Starks. Yes, there was sex and violence, but interlaced with that was the story of an unassuming patriarch forced to put his family in a precarious situation. This family was full of dynamic characters that we were able to get to know, each with their own desires, insecurities, and flaws. It was clear who we had to root for. The world was dark and dangerous, absolutely, but their survival and determination was always the bright spark. It was almost they existed despite the world they lived in. I found it really hard to care about any of these characters in House of the Dragon. Towards the very end of this season, sure, we kind of got there, but watching much of the season was a chore for me. I was surprised, honestly, when I was satisfied or invested in a moment from time to time. More often than not, I was put off, frustrated, or insulted. With where my head is at the moment, I really, truly don't want a cynical show. Not to this degree, anyway. And fair play to those that do want it and are able to enjoy it. Awesome. Great for you. I just simply can't love a show that is so miserable, in which trauma is the driving force with no promise of a brighter future. At least, you know, I think of something like, what's that show about the really rich media mogul family? What's the name of it?
Succession.
So at least with Succession, we've got like humor in there that I can like, well, this is absurd and funny. Yes, it's super cynical. It's quite brutal, all that stuff. But there are some lighter moments in observing the absurdity of those people. I'm not getting that in House of the Dragon. It's so dark, all of the time. When I was like watching House of the Dragon, I couldn't help but compare, and maybe I shouldn't, maybe it's not the right thing to do, but these two shows were coming out at the same time, and that's obviously Rings of Power. Now, that show is something that is so focused on hope, much like the Lord of the Rings films, which I absolutely love. Yes, times are tough, but through love, friendship, and honor, you can overcome anything. For right now, that's the story I want. And that show's not perfect, of course not, but that is the story I want. Not one where characters get their heads chopped in half, queens are sold and brutalized, and everyone must consistently sacrifice morality in order to survive. I think perhaps this show is great if you liked all aspects of Game of Thrones back in the day and your opinion or view of that stuff hasn't changed. I just can't stomach a lot of it anymore. If there was like maybe less of that and some more politicking, I could. But right now with season one, I just don't want to watch it. And that's my review.
Fair enough. For different reasons, but not mm-hmm. dissimilar reasons, if that makes sense. I also was not a huge fan of this season of TV. I don't think it's a bad show. I think in many objective senses, it's obviously quite well crafted, but it just couldn't capture my attention or intrigue. I'm not 100% certain why that is, but I have my theories. Theory one is that there's just, I have a bias against it. I may well be holding a grudge against Game of Thrones and how it ended. It might be that I'm just still not over that, just how disappointing the ending to that show was after like literal years, nearly a decade or something like that, of being invested in that show and then letting us down so much. I might just be in a space where I'd rather not like this show than like it. It's possible. A bit like you, I might also just be in a place where I'm not in the right place for this sort of story and tone. I'm not going to respond to that well. We talked about, exactly as you said, Rings of Power, and maybe that was the right show to meet us at the right time. And I kind of agree with that. I think that this is the opposite, the other side of that coin. This is the wrong show to meet me at this time right now. I remember there's a scene, you did mention the brutal violence in episode one. There's a particular part of episode one, or is it episode two? I think it's episode one. Involving the queen, and she's giving birth to a child. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm really not here for this. It's like, I'm not having a good time watching this. This is how you're introducing me to this show. Yeah. Not starting on the right foot, let's put it that way. Theory two is fatigue. I think a lot of what this show is covering is very familiar ground to anyone who watched Game of Thrones. I think if you think about like, maybe this is better left for spoilers, but questions of like lineage and bloodlines and bastards and who's the rightful king or queen and should there be a war over that stuff is like, yeah, we did this with Joffrey and the Targaryens and the Baratheons and the Lannisters. Like, we've done this already. It's disappointing to come back to a show that's just trying to do the same stuff again, even to the point where like it's in the same places. It's still in King's Landing. It's in the Red Keep. Mm. These are the same fucking rooms. These are the same fucking tables. Like, it's really given me very little that is new or refreshing anyway. And I think that if you're going to do a new show set in the same world, don't make it feel like it's the same. Find a new angle on it, if that makes sense. And the other thing is I just can't tell you how much I don't give a shit about dragons. Like, I really just don't care about dragons. And the show really wants you to care about dragons. And I just don't. I just don't. You look like you were going to say something there, Damask.
Sorry, I was, and then you froze. Yeah, I mean, I remember every time I'd like watch an episode and feel this level of frustration at many of the things that I was seeing, like my lack of care for any of the characters. I think the time jumps are really unhelpful in terms of really letting me attach to them. Mm-hmm. But I jump on Twitter to like, you know, I guess a bit of confirmation bias is what I was looking for. You know, like you want to see people kind of reflecting your opinions or see some lively debate. And all I was seeing for the most part, was just people's excitement over seeing a fucking dragon. And I was beside myself. I'm like, is there not more? Maybe that's all there is. Maybe that's what people keep coming back for, to see dragons flying around or eating people or setting people on fire. I don't know. It is not a huge draw for me.
Well, like, it's, again, it's something we did last time. It's like, could you find, like, I know this is the story, so it has to have dragons in it, obviously. But, like, we did plenty of dragons. We did lots of dragons eating people, setting people on fire, dragons fighting each other. Like, we did that at different times in Game of Thrones. Maybe if there was other mythical creatures and stuff like that, it would hold my interest. But dragons for the sake of dragons is just not enough, I don't think. Theory 3, execution. I just found the show pretty boring. I think it's missing something that Game of Thrones had, in that Game of Thrones also had, like, just characters I cared about or enjoyed being around. Characters like Ned, as you mentioned, like this unassuming patriarch of this sort of back, like, he's a lord of a house, but they're not, you know, rich in the same way that the Lannisters are and stuff like that. They're sort of live in the cold and they're in the mud almost. Like, it's not glamorous, but you care about him and Catelyn, you care about the family, and that's like an early in for you. Then you've got Tyrion, who gets introduced really on, and he provides wit and charm, and, like, you enjoy being around Tyrion. I just think Game of Thrones in general was wittier. I think, like, between Tyrion and, like, Littlefinger and Varys and even, like, Cersei, like, her, like, villainous...
Give me drunk Cersei any day.
Drunk Cersei was a stone-cold bitch, and she was really fun to, like, spend time with. Because Joffrey was, like, a villain we loved to hate. He was such a little shit, but that was really enjoyable to spend time with him. It just made the show that much more watchable, and I couldn't get over how much I just... didn't want to spend time with anybody in this show at any stage. I found them all very, 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 very dull. It's also a question to me is the characters they chose to... that's another thing about this show, right? It's more focused, and then it's more around a smaller group of characters generally, right? Game of Thrones tends to spread itself out a lot thinner. Characters over multiple different locations and... they've got different angles all the time. Whereas this, it was the same family. Again, I know this is the what the show is about, but it meant it was always in the same place, or primarily in the same place. It was primarily the same characters. And I often found them introducing characters who were from families that were related but not the Targaryens directly, and going, can we spend some more time with them? They just seem more interesting to me than what's going on. And they kept... like, I could have done it with a lot more of the Valyrian storyline. I found those characters way more interesting for some reason, and we just didn't. And we spend a scene there for some reason, every other episode. I'm like, go back, stop moving away from these people, and we don't have to go back to King's Landing right now. They were just more likable. I don't know. Position was more interesting, and it was disappointing. I think the pacing of the show is fucking piss poor. Like,
it's crazy. Yeah.
And I mean that both in the macro and the micro. On the micro level, from scene to scene, like, there's a wedding, I think, at the end of episode 5. And obviously weddings go great in Game of Thrones. But, like, for a long portions of it, I was like, I think they're trying to build tension, but I'm just bored. Like, I am sick of being here. Why is this so interminable? I want this to end because this is boring. And then you do things like a 10-year time jump and then a 6-year time jump, and you are missing, I think, very important connective tissue in there. We just go from one place to another and we change actors. Some of them change, some of them don't. Some of them get older, some of them don't. Very weird. That didn't bother me so much. It was just it just created unnecessary friction between me and the story, I think. Barriers. It was very, very strange. All that being said, there are some very, very strong moments in this show. I think performances are strong across the board. I think if there are problems for me, it's more of a writing, direction, editing problem. I think Paddy Considine, I think that's how you say his name, who played King Viserys, he was the standout for me. Especially some of the work he did in episode 8. I think he was great. If he gets like an Emmy nod at the end of this, all power to him. And like you said, by the end of the season, they started to make me care about some of our key players. So that was like a step in the right direction. But it took a whole season to start to open up the story to like Westeros rather than just
yeah. King's Landing. This really was a season of like setting the scene is what was happening. You know, he's like a PowerPoint history lesson of like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and this happened. And now next season is when things are really going to be taking place. I'm like, okay, cool. Then
yeah.
What were we doing now? Like,
feel like we could have got there a lot sooner. And like, I've said that to somebody, and their argument was that that's what season one of Game of Thrones was like. Like, season one ends in a place where things are about to take off. But I'd still argue that...
But that was all about character, though. That was, like, letting us, like, sit with character.
That's the difference, right? It was... A, it was set in character, and B, I think, like, some big, exciting things started to happen relatively quickly. Let's say episode 4, for instance, right? Like, minus spoilers for the very, very early stages of Game of Thrones, an 8-season show, whatever it was. The episode where Catelyn decides to arrest Tyrion under suspicion of pushing Bran out the window, trying to murder Bran, right? No, it wasn't because they found the knife, the guy that came to try and kill Bran the Night, and it was a Lannister knife. That to me was like when the show got exciting, where I got like invested because I liked both Tyrion and I liked Catelyn, and there was just causing all sorts of fun tension. And like that sort of thing never happened in this show until the very end of the season. It took like Game of Thrones season one was already doing that. So we're at a place now where things might be interesting, and that is definitely a tick, but I just don't know if I care enough to keep watching. And that's ultimately where I'm left with this season. Damask, out of 5 stars, how would you score this first season of House of the Dragon?
Yeah, it's not a bad show. I just didn't really enjoy it. No moments here and there. So I've been like umming and ahhing between a 3 and a 3.5.
Me too. Exactly that.
I'll give it a 3.
Okay. I'll give it a 3.5 then. I'll go the slightly higher end. But, I mean, 3 is decent.
Mm.
I think it's got too many qualities. Like, I didn't really talk about the production values. But, yeah, it looks good, I guess. Except when you can't see it. That's a different story. But, like, yeah, it's, like, obviously a well-made production, so it's got to be a bit better than decent. It's well-acted. Do you think it's well-written?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I think it's, like, fine, but, like, competently it's missing a spark. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's competently written, but I don't think it's well-written. So I think it's better than decent, but it's not excellent, so I'm going to go 3.5 as well.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Before we dive into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the show to please review us on Apple Podcasts and or Spotify. Nothing helps a show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars and maybe a couple of nice words our way.
And to sweeten the deal, if we reach 25 written reviews on Apple Podcasts, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1.
We'd also love you to share hunting seasons with friends and family who you think might also enjoy listening.
Next episode, we'll be back with our review of Andor Season 1. If you'd like to contribute to our discussion of Andor, or if you have any thoughts on House of the Dragon, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact at huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter at huntingscast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for House of the Dragon Season 1.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
I'm not sure I have a whole lot to say. I don't have a favorite character or storyline. So much of it feels like a retread, as I said. So much of the same ground we covered in Game of Thrones. Question life successions, bastards, misogyny, incest, dragons, brutal deaths, impending war, lots of King's Landing. Like, we've done this before. I don't have a whole lot to add to that. Probably the standout difference for me in terms of, like, any character or any part that feels different to Game of Thrones is King Viserys. Did you feel that? Like, did you feel like he was the most interesting? Or, well, in the sense that I don't remember a character in Game of Thrones that was like a decent king who was ruling through a time of relative peace, trying to deal with his fucked up family while also slowly dying of an insidious disease. Like, that was a somewhat refreshing and original take on things that wasn't in Game of Thrones, unless I'm forgetting a character.
Yeah, I think, sure, that's an interesting aspect. I think there's so little of that. Every time, you know, particularly when his disease was progressing much faster and he was kind of reflecting on what his legacy would be. Sure, interesting concept. Do we get anything beyond maybe a conversation here or there? No, we don't. So I didn't really find him that interesting either.
I did. I guess I just mean it. I felt whether the show did a great job with it or not, at least found him to be like a refreshing aspect in terms of what he represented. Because we didn't have that sort of character in Game of Thrones. Like, what was his name? The Baratheon king? Rob, right? Like, Rob was a shit king. He was a drunk, like...
Well, he was a soldier and didn't actually have
and
any
soldier who became, absolutely.
Skills to be a king, yeah.
Then we had Joffrey, who was a shit of a king. The closest we probably got was when Tommen became king. But the aspect was that he was so young and so naive and also trying to be decent and being manipulated in that aspect. And then we ended up with essentially Cersei from then on. So we never got that sort of idea of like a peacetime king who was trying to hold it all together. The idea of like, I did like the idea of like him not going to have much of a legacy because he didn't conquer anything. There were no wars. He was known, you know, he was a successful king during peaceful times. He came to be king through some controversy because it could have been his sister or cousin, whatever her name was, that could have taken the place instead.
There I liked little, her. That was a character I found interesting, actually.
My favorite character in the entire show. I fucking don't even remember her name. Rhaenys?
They all have the Rhaenys? Same fucking
Rhaenys.
Name.
That's a problem, too. What the fuck? Why do their names always start with R's or V's? Or A's? Or D's? Like, fucking find different fucking sounds, please.
And everyone's got a Y, an A, and an E in there. You know what I mean? Like, they're just...
I think it's Rhaenys. I think her name is Rhaenys. But yes, she was the character I wish we were spending more time with.
Yeah.
Go over to the sea
like
area.
If there was, I mean, I do love that she kind of resigned herself to her position. She once had aspirations. They were completely diminished by the culture she was raised in. I wouldn't have minded maybe like while we have this like peaceful king, I don't know, a bit of politicking going on. Like, where was that fun part of the show? There was, like, obviously there were, like, schemes to, I don't know, burn people alive and stuff. But none of this, like, really intelligent politicking that I really missed from Game of Thrones.
They had the guy with the walking stick who was, like, this version of Littlefinger. I honestly
disgusting.
Don't remember his name.
I hated
it. Reminded me of that character from Arcane. Like, he wasn't a bad guy. He was the... can't remember his name, but he was like...
Yeah.
Had a limp and stuff as well, or, you know. Anyway.
But it didn't seem like... There wasn't a whole lot of politicking. He's like, I'll do a favor for you, and then you'll let me masturbate while I look at your feet. What are we doing? It's just like, what are we doing? It couldn't be a more interesting like relationship between those two that could have been developed. No, we had to think of like the most uncomfortable, grossest, exploitative thing we could think of. Like, I think of that scene when he starts pleasing himself, looking at her feet, and I was just like, this show sucks balls. This fucking sucks. Like, why are we doing this?
Do you feel like that's shock value above anything else?
Yes. Like, it's not an 100%, that's what it is. That's exactly what they want me to have that base. Reaction.
Yeah, yep. I agree with you. I think it's there to make you go, not there to make you...
Yeah.
Like, and that was what was interesting about Game of Thrones too. It didn't start this way. Obviously, it got there. Spoilers for Game of Thrones. Surely if you're watching this show, you've seen Game of Thrones. Like, the Jaime and Cersei stuff was always gross, but it was always compelling somehow as well. Like, how these two were so in love and so...
But, like, so toxic and codependent and...
Totally.
It was complicated, like, one for, like, kind of power and protection, the other for, like... from a place of genuine adoration. Yeah, and yeah, it was just, it was so much better than whatever this is.
From a politicking point of view as well, it's like, I think they tried to like it to be a surprise, like when Viserys died and then Allison comes back and says, she misunderstood that he was trying to talk to Rhaenyra, thought he was talking to Rhaenyra, talking to Alicent, and then says that shit about Aegon the Conqueror, mm-hmm. not Aegon his son, that she misinterpreted him saying, I wanted him to be king, not Rhaenyra mm-hmm. to be queen. And then like she takes that back to the King's Council, and they're like, cool, let's do it. We were always going to throw her out anyway once this happened. Now we have a reason. Let's go. I was like, oh, I feel like I wish there was a bit more of a build-up to this or something like that. I wish she had made more scheming and
maneuvering rather than just like,
and then we'll just kill them. We'll just kill them now. Like,
yeah. But I just feel like I kind of wished for that character, right? Like so powerless for so long, just like a pawn amongst the men in her life, which is why that foot fetish scene made me so upset. I'm like, oh, okay, here's another man who's using her, cool, awesome, for like in the most base way.
You don't think she's using manipulating him, just hold on.
And then so obviously she understands the stakes involved in which like if one of her children doesn't become the heir, if instead of like, oopsie do, I made a mistake and misunderstood, if she had made a really hard and complicated active choice to be like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to tell this lie. And that would then like kind of be a shadow on her character because she likes to think of herself as being so virtuous and she's
so,
not.
So. Talking to our friend Ben, who devours these books and is all across the lore and has been telling me since the show started about the differences between the books and stuff. For instance, the Song of Ice and Fire prophecy is not a part of the book. The book is also, though, written more as a historical text rather than as an actual, like, in-person narrative. So it's like someone, from my understanding, has interpreted the stories or the history and tried to put it in context and explain the different versions that people have heard of like how events went down. But because this is meant to be a character-focused story that we're seeing unfold in real time, they've had to actually have definitive versions of events. For instance, in the text, as far as I understand, it is not known whether he actually... what Viserys said to Alicent, if anything, on the night of his death. If he died of natural causes, if he was poisoned, which is, you know, the theory, whether the whole thing was a lie or whether not. So in this show, when they make the choice that thought he was talking to Rhaenyra's and Alicent either willfully or accidentally interpreted as being, I want Aegon to succeed after me, then that choice takes... like, the fact that it's kind of an accident, it's kind of a misunderstanding, I think is the worst version. of like Agreed. How that could have gone down. It should have either been she killed him and like decided that's what she wanted, or he died and she went, I'm going to take this opportunity to do this. Or he actually said to her, I've changed my mind. I want Aegon to be the next guy. Not some wishy-washy in-between misunderstanding. It's even like when like rom-coms, when people misunderstand that they hear half a conversation, decide that person hates
even
them.
Even if it's a situation where we don't know. We see her going to the room. He calls her name. The door closes and we don't know what that conversation is.
Exactly.
Fine. Absolutely. That gives me an air of mystery about her, about like who she really is as a character. Yeah.
And then you're trying to read that from her. Like, has she been playing this game the whole time? Has she been actually upfront about it and been putting her feelings on the table? Like, but I hate the option they went with. When I found out that wasn't part of the original text, I was like, and this is what they chose to do. Such a weird choice.
Yeah.
Didn't do it for me at all. That being said, I kind of like the character of Alicent. I just don't feel like it goes far enough with it. I don't know.
I do like the character as well. I think so. Yes, they have villainy in the show, and I think this could have been a great example of complicated villainy, because obviously we have our other, you know, heir to be, and her old friend and all of that stuff. It could have been like, well, I totally understand why she did it, but now I hate you because of what you've done and the consequences for everything, as opposed to just having, I don't know, people chop each other in half or like twirling their mustaches or whatever.
Did you like Rhaenyra? Essentially the main character.
There were moments that I enjoyed her, like, when she was in her cute little beard marriage, I was like, this is quite cute, actually. there were moments. I really liked towards the end of the season, you know, the episode where you're like, oh, her son's definitely going to die because they have a beautiful relationship. Mm-hmm. I liked seeing that aspect of her, and I think we get to a really cool place at the end, obviously, like a mother mourning, that kind of white hot rage that will be coming from her, looking forward to all of that. At the very beginning, I was like, I mean, am I meant to root for someone who's had, you know, everything given to them? Maybe.
This is the other problem with the show. I think it's just very hard to feel invested about this, like,
monarchy?
Secret war of, like, who the fuck is next in line. It's so fucking boring as a concept.
I was like, can we have, like, I don't know, a people's rebellion or something? Like,
right.
You know, something like that?
Is not something that Game of Thrones had, right? But you always felt like the Starks were coming from a place of honor and truth and, like, trying to understand the conspiracy and pull that apart and, like, trying to make right the real manipulations and wrongs that were there. But this is so much even more entrenched in just, it's not like another house thinks they've got a claim to the throne. It's individuals within the same house, within the same family.
Yeah, which one of these over rich kids, is going to get the same family.
Now, that being said, that's also the plot line for Succession, which we love.
Which is funny and written amazingly well.
And on a character perspective is much more fascinating than that, because, the individuals are actually the thing. It's not actually who's going to take over the Roy fortune that you're interested in. You're just interested in how these fucked up these kids are and how much their daddy has fucked them up. And I just wasn't getting that from this show. Instead, I was getting that they wanted me to care about who actually took the throne. I just couldn't care less about it. And it's funny, we watched The Crown as well, which is all about that sort of stuff too. But that's also examining the contradiction of the royal family and in context to the rest of the world, to politicians, to real life people, in the ideas of celebrity and religion, all these sorts of things. This show doesn't do it. It's just like for the sake of who the fuck is next in line. And like, oh, God.
Because ultimately, because these characters are all like same, everyone's pretty shit, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it really doesn't matter. other than like this prophecy, like it's again, not like wasn't part truly of the book important to like any of them. Like it just, it's just something to want. And it's like, well, okay, cool. That's exciting, I guess.
Which was part of the reason that towards the end, like when war was looming,
mm-hmm.
and Rhaenyra was like, let's not, like, if we're going to go to war, we're going to go to war, but I'm not going to be the one to start this. Let's do everything we can to try and, mm-hmm. like, prevent all-out war from happening.
Yes.
Was when I was like, oh, fuck, like, a leader, yeah. right?
We're seeing, like, her father's daughter, that's cool. Like, she's really kind of thinking things through. Yep.
But it was an actual, like, seeing a leadership quality, so therefore mm-hmm. caring about who the leader might be for once.
Yes, yes,
that
yes.
had never come into play in any way before that, of any substance. There was nothing to make me go, yes, no, preference, prefer not. Like, nothing. That was the first mm-hmm. time. And then, obviously, they flipped that with what happens to her son, which is, while a boring dragon scene, the idea of giving kids, like, nuclear-powered fighter planes that have a mind of their own that end up killing, one kills the other and that starts a war is kind of, that is entertaining as an idea. That's kind of fun.
I will say, sorry, Pearl's barking. I will say that, dragons are boring, blah, blah, blah. Because I really like that cute little prince boy, who's quite possibly the cutest actor, so adorable. And he's on that teeny tiny little dragon and he's hiding from that big motherfucker. I was feeling pretty tense. I was. that was the one that I was like, I'm scared now. And the ending is brutal. I think that's my favorite dragon sequence.
Sure. But it was also, what was interesting about it, was brutal, but it wasn't like gratuitous. Like the dragon like eats an the other dragon. Yeah. And then it was like dragon bits. It wasn't maimed boy bits. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, he didn't get, like, the boy's hand landed on his head or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
It was like the dragon got ripped to bits, and you're like, oh, fuck. That's a big dragon ate a little dragon. That was a highlight, I guess, of the show. So I'm not feeling a lot from Rhaenyra. What about, like, the relationship between Rhaenyra and Daemon, Matt Smith's Daemon? Or Daemon in general as a character.
I mean, I know that the internet was like all a flutter about that situation.
Were they?
Yeah. What? They super were.
Why?
Why do you think, bro? Because they're all creepy weirdos that just like
full of sickos.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really care. It's weird that I expected him to get more interesting, and he didn't really to me.
No.
Yeah.
Got less interesting somehow. I like Matt Smith. Like, he's my favorite doctor. I really liked him as Prince Philip in The Crown. Mm-hmm, I got nothing against this actor. I just didn't find Daemon all that interesting. It was another guy, another second in line, having a hissy fit.
Egomaniac.
Yep. Brutal, falling in love with his relative. Child. Being a weirdo, violent person. Not interesting. Not complex, not layered in any way that I found particularly compelling to watch.
No.
Maybe the most interesting bit was the bit at the end where he decided to choke Rhaenyra, which was a bit like, finally they found an angle that was a little bit like dangerous finally. Maybe they understood that this is fucked up and this is not cool. But it happened right at the end.
Yeah. I mean, the only bits of like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Obviously, like, we do see moments of like him having genuine love for his brother. I don't know. Maybe I'd like to see his more complicated feelings around like his desire for power, but also does have the capacity to love those who are more powerful than him. I don't know. Can you tell that I don't really care?
Well, it's just a problem. I just don't know what it adds up to. It's like he starts out as a thorn in his brother's side. He gets exiled. He comes back. He leaves. He comes back. He leaves. He comes back. His brother dies. He's married his niece.
Tale of all time.
It wasn't a compelling story. It just wasn't a compelling journey for him. Mm-hmm. I didn't come away from it going, oh, I really, you know, felt Damon grow in one direction or another. It was just kind of stuff happening is what it felt like to me. Until it got to a point where it's like feels like things might actually start to matter towards the end of the season. It's just way too little too late for me. Otto Hightower, Allison's dad, Hand of the King, mustache twirly villain of the season.
Mm, God, hated it. And I love that actor. But
yeah, Reese Ifans, he's great.
Yeah.
Ifans? Yeah, he's a great actor. Boring character.
Yep, agreed.
Not particularly fascinating. Not great. Not as great a schemer as... I don't know. This is what I mean. It's like, I feel like there's this bias in me that's just like, we've done this. I've seen this before. It feels the same. It looks the same. It sounds the same. It is the same.
It's not as good. It's genuinely not as good.
It's a facsimile of the thing we saw previously. There was so few like highlight characters. What about Christian Cole? Did you enjoy
Christian Cole?
the knight that was like the Kingsguard guy that.
Oh, the incel.
They're incel. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I felt the same way about him as I do all incels. Not a fan.
Not a fan, but I guess I enjoyed, again, that felt a little bit original from a Game of Thrones perspective. I'm not sure we had many like of those. There was something to him that felt fresh for the Game of Thrones story. It's like, yes, the incel, the uber nice guy. I called him the nega Ned Stark. He's like all about his honor and stuff, but in a really toxic way. Like Ned's weakness was his honor. So is Christian's, but Christian takes in a really personal, like, gross incel way, as opposed to Ned, who
fully
like,
murders someone too- in the middle of like the court. Like,
yeah.
Insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I hated that scene. Ugh, why? I mean, that is an interesting, complicated character, all about honor and stuff, but obviously has a lot of anger about the fact that he has to follow rules and other people don't.
That's why I like
that. But the expression of that character being just pure violence is less interesting to me.
He's also not subtle, right? Like, he's such a blunt instrument. He's kind of a massive dummy. And that makes him less interesting because, like, when he's saying things like strong to try and get a rise out of the boys or out of the Mr. Strong, whatever that guy's name was, the night guy.
Yeah, when he walks up and's like, what's up, Mr. Strong? Yeah, it's a great line.
You read these Mr. Men books. Have you read Mr. Strong? it's like he's a blandishment, which doesn't make him particularly interesting, and we just get to spend moments with him, not like time with him, if that makes sense. We don't get to really invest in that story in any particularly interesting way, but the concept of that character in that world I thought there was something there, if that makes sense. There was something to it,
a glimmer of something.
What about Aegon and Aemond, I think is his name? There's the shit prince and the eye patch prince. Do you care about either of them?
I mean, they're both pretty shit. I like the way the eye patch guy looks. I think he looks like an awesome cartoon character.
Absolutely.
And I find that very fascinating to look at. I really enjoyed his aesthetic.
He looks like an anime villain. Like, he's straight out
truly,
of like an anime.
Truly, truly. Like, all those angles
such
happening.
Sharp features and, like, the eye patch and the hair and his sneering look and stuff. Like, he was at least having a good time, and I was having a good time.
Well, I found him quite scary. Like when him and the cute puppy dog prince are like face to face. I'm like, oh no. So I think he has potential to be, I mean, obviously we don't like mustache twirling, but if we do have to have them, I'm glad they look like him. You know what
also,
I mean?
Also,
it's a bit camp and fun.
It is fun, right? And it's, and then again, how this ends with like him sort of playing with, is it Jason or something like that? I can't remember the kid's name.
I don't know.
The puppy dog prince anyway. And, but then accidentally, brutally murdering him because they can't control their dragons. And him being like, oh shit, I fucked up. Was a great way for that like Edgelords situation to end at the end of this season. Like, that's humorous.
It's all fun and games until you kill your cousin. Uncle? Is that his uncle or cousin?
I think it's his nephew.
Okay. Yes.
I think it's it'd be nephew because he's the it'd be nephew because he's the
nephew.
He's the younger brother of Viserys.
It's so hard to tell with these incestuous families.
Is there anyone else, any storyline, any aspect whatsoever of this season of television that like you latched onto that you cared about in any way that you want to talk about?
Definitely not.
No, I know. I really, really, really wish I did. And like, I'm sure there are people who are deep diving on lines and their meaning and comparing them to the books and what's different and why this is fascinating. And I just got to tell you, I thought you said it was a chore. I thought it was a chore watching this show. I was trying to watch one a day for a while, and it was like I would rather have washed the dishes and like clean the kitchen and like whatever it was than watched an episode of this show.
I was watching it week to week, like as it was coming out, which was good. But like, it was not appointment television for me. Mm-mm. Like, I'd let a couple of days go by, like, oh yeah, I've got to watch that. Better keep up. It just wasn't pulling me back each week, unfortunately.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes, Damask?
Not really.
I'll start my side notes with this question. What did you think of the opening credit sequence? Opening titles.
Didn't care for them.
Why not?
Well, they weren't as good as Game of Thrones, so I would just fast forward through.
It's it literally just copies the same music and then does something that's like recognizably like the first Game of Thrones opening credits, but not quite, and just not as good.
Yeah.
And like, what a perfect encapsulation of the problems of this show. It's like relying on being associated with this other better TV show until it wasn't a very good TV show, and then just not being as good at it. It just perfectly summed it up. I skipped them. Do you know I never did once watching Game of Thrones?
No, not me either. Yeah, I skipped them. The House of the Dragon one every single time. Like, no, don't care. Also, like, just the excitement or the promise that that theme song had because you knew a great episode was going to follow it. I didn't have that excitement, so I just did care.
That's true, too. Yeah, the music wasn't enough anymore. It had been tainted at this point. I just want to point out Matt Smith's bow-legged walk. I don't know if that suits the 11th Doctor great. I don't know if it suits Daemon Targaryen very well. I find it very, very funny. Also, Matt Smith is... What?
I mean, I didn't notice, but yeah, go on.
You didn't know? Watch him walk. He's got this little,
I know,
like,
he's got like a little
bow-legged
swagger
waddle.
Walk,
it's not swagger. It's a waddle. He has a waddle going. His feet are pointing in opposite directions. Like, it is so bow-legged, and it really suits the 11th Doctor, and it suited Prince Philip weirdly pretty well. Didn't suit Daemon. It always looked a bit silly. And when they'd cloak him to like hide who it was, and he's got this like waddle going, like, it's obviously Daemon. Why are you trying to hide this? That Smith gait is really, really obvious. He's getting very, very experienced playing King Consorts, I've noticed. He's become that's like his typecasting now. There's some fucking awful wig work in this show.
Yeah.
The wigs they put on the girls, the Valyrians or whatever they were, like the white wigs. But you could see their natural hair underneath it. Really obviously, it was some shocking wig work, and there was lots of, like, Game of Thrones is famous for that too, but it was bad in this show. Sonoya Mizuno, right, plays this character, I don't know her name, she's like the one that's fucking Daemon in the first few episodes, she comes back in the last
episodes. Oh, is this about
her
accent?
What the fuck is that accent? What is she doing?
I remember when I was watching it.
Oh my god.
Anton and I just turned to each other and we're like, what is that?
What is that?
Yeah, that was going to be one of my lowlights. Yeah, truly, that accent is astonishingly bad.
Is it like maybe it's not, but it felt like it should be offensive. Someone should be offended by this accent. I think it's not right.
I think we're all
it.
Allowed to be offended by that accent.
are we allowed to, mate? Which is, again, it's a bit of a shock because, like, we've loved her and other stuff. We've Deus Ex, Devs, Maniac. Like, she's great. She's an awesome act. Fucking what is she doing? How they let her do this? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's cruel.
Actually, a scene I did enjoy, I must say, in this show was the slap Renfair edition when they had the... do you remember this scene where, like, they're arguing over which child was doing something and then they took an eye... Oh, yeah, they took... That's right, they had the fight. They took his eye out. Then they're having a fight over, like, whose fault it was and... Did you watch The Slap, the Australian TV show? Did you read the book, The Slap?
No, I didn't.
Oh, damn. That was wasted on you. That's a shame.
I'm sorry.
Felt like very much like... It's a whole drama about, like, these people at a barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then one guy slaps a kid, and then, like, it just... Everything blows up, and it just felt like The Slap, but everyone... LARPing. It was very funny to me. I know I really enjoyed it. Highlights and lowlights. What was your lowlight, Damascus? Was it that accent?
All right, so I'll take that accent off the list. I'm going to say, like, the first episode, I was like, oh, damn. They have, like, they've just copy and pasted in terms of, like the gore, the violence, and the, like, exploitative sex. And I was like, oh, it's like 2022, this really should feel slightly different, and it didn't, and I was just kind of put offside from the get-go.
Yeah, you were let down real quick. I'm gonna say my low light was the super dark, can't see what's going on episode, parts of episode 7. Like, didn't we learn anything from the Battle of Winterfell? Everyone was having a whinge about this back in the day. How are we still shooting this shit and I can't see what these actors are doing or what's going on? I do not understand what happened.
Yeah,
and what's
if
worse,
you can't
is,
see it on your TV, then people like me have no hope.
I mean, it's partly got to do... I think if it was like, if you were watching this on a good, like, OLED and you were watching, like, the 4K HDR version off, like, a Blu-ray, then you'd probably be fine. But... because of HBO and then Foxtel by extension and Binge also here, for whatever reason, their encoding is bullshit. It just turns into a grey mess on our end. And it's... I don't understand how it hasn't gotten better. It's bad. And it just... it doesn't need to be. What's worst of all, some scenes earlier in the episode were artificially made darker. They were obviously shot during the day. And then because of, like, I guess the timeline was confusing. When she's telling the kids to go to bed and it would have still been daylight, it would have seemed weird. So they artificially obviously darkened it and it just looked disgusting. Like, a very technically proficient show that just... I don't know what they were doing. Anyway, highlight. What was your highlight for the season, Damask?
Yeah, it was right towards the end. Obviously, we have, like, the prince puppy dog goes. And is it the Baratheons they go to see?
Yes,
is
correct.
Is that who it is? Yeah.
Storm's End, I think. Yeah.
And even though that Baratheon is a total douchebag, he's like, well, obviously, you're not going to kill him here. I'm not going to let that happen. That would be insane. I was like, thank you. Appreciate that. And then
also looked like Rob. I like that he, like, genetically was obviously, like, the great-great-great-great-granddad of...
Yeah,
Robert Baratheon.
As we famously know, Baratheons all look alike, and that was the whole issue with the incest Lannister situation.
Strong genetics.
Mm-hmm.
Dominant genes.
It was a huge plot point in Game of Thrones.
It was, yeah, legit.
Yeah, and then obviously what that means for, is it Rhaenyra? That's her name? Moving forward, and the fact that she really now has kind of a reason to fight for that throne, which is out of pure revenge.
Absolutely. My highlight, I'm going to say, is the opening of episode 6. It was the first of our time jumps. We didn't really talk about that, actually. Before I go on with my... Actually, I'll finish my highlight. There's that scene where Rhaenyra's was having her baby and it was, like, all in one shot. And then they have her walking because the queen wants to see the baby, like, right now for some insane reason. She's like, I'm not giving her my kid. I Will Go, and her walking up the stairs. I really enjoyed the execution of that scene. It was well executed, like in how it was done from a production point, and then from a character's point of view also, it was giving me something. You know what I mean? It was like, in an exciting, fun way, it was telling me something about these characters. And it was a very rare glimmer of like originality and like bold storytelling. I quite enjoyed that sequence. But what you didn't ask, time jumps, changing of the actors and stuff like that. Did that throw you off? Were you okay with that?
Yeah, I think I said earlier that actually got in the way of me kind of attaching to character. So it was an issue. I mean, there's obviously this is the, a quick PowerPoint history lesson for the show moving forward. That's like this season is that. So I get why they felt they had to do it, but I think it's got in the way for me, definitely.
Could you have like started the show maybe where episode 6 starts and then like done some flashbacks or something like that instead of doing it in
good writing where you can kind of give context and backstory. There's other ways to do it.
That could certainly work too. Yeah, find a way to discuss these things. Yeah, and just have the actors talk about it. I don't think it was a good choice ultimately. And one they won't have to worry about going forward, I don't think. So that's at least off the table. But yeah, didn't help get me on board, that's for sure. Predictions, hopes, and concerns for season 2. We know one's coming. It won't be here until 2024, but it's on the way. Anything? Predictions, hopes, concerns?
I hope it gets better. Prediction is I may not watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, I might like watch an episode, like one or two of that season, just see the vibe. And if it's really not for me, then I'm just happy to walk away at that point.
Yeah. I hope they can make me give a crap. That's my hope. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, a.k.a. at Shawnee Boy Draws. Our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordis, on Hive Social at OBigStretch. That is actually down that website currently, so you can't find me there. But I want that to be my handle going forward. I've somehow managed to claim that at Hive and on Twitch and a few other places. So that's cool. Damask?
Once again, can't find me anywhere. So if you want to contact me, just email the Hunting Seasons email.
Absolutely. Next episode, we'll be back to discuss Andor Season 1, a show I'm much more looking forward to discussing. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye. Good night, everybody. Absolutely.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.